horses. We covered about 20 miles through that wasteland, and lay overnight by the well serving the nearby village of Ad Abaga. The wells, being low-lying, are necessarily outside the walls of all the hill communities. I was thankful for my escort of bearded evil faces as we sat around our fire listening to the jackals and the occasional horrid hee-hee of a hyena, while we watched the moon rise to silhouette another of those nightmare cliff castles. I remarked on its ghastly look, and the Sindhi Havildar chuckled. "The Hussar has heard the story of their castle, no? Of the strange lady of the fortress who is seen by no one? The tale runs that she is the wife of a robber chief who is a prisoner of the King of Luster." He pointed to the distant mountains. "And that she has vowed that the sun shall not shine or the rain fall on her head until he is home again. Others believe she is under a spell, an enchantress bound by some great magician to dwell for ever confined and solitary." "A regular Lady of Shalott, eh? And what do the Sindhis think?" "Why, that she bribed the King of Luster to kidnap her man so that she might beguile herself with lusty servitors," cries he, and his ruffians chortled approval. I quoted Ildirim Khan's adage, "A Gilzai and a grandmother for scandal," and they fairly hooted. Our way next day lay through more broken country and tumble-down remains of raided villages, across a plateau so rough that it was late afternoon before we came up with Napier's pickets on the crest that overlooks Mai Dahar, a shallow valley cut across by a stream where John Bull first came face to face with Prester John. A momentous meeting, and a splendid spectacle by all accounts, with our stalwart ranks of King's Own, native cavalry and infantry, and artillery firing salutes from the near side of the stream, while the Tigray army, 4,000 strong, suddenly came into view on the far crest, drums thundering as they formed a vast half-moon formation, with their monarch in its midst. I say, by all accounts, because I arrived too late to see it. And if you want the colourful details, you must refer again to Henty and Stanley, or any of the great rabble of correspondents who were on hand. They'll tell you how Napier rode to the meeting on an elephant, but had to get off because it scared the Tigray horses, and finally arrived in the royal presence on a charger, which he presented as a gift to King Khusaw, along with a rifle, receiving in return a shield, spear, lion tippet, and a white mule. They spent the day in the king's tent, confabbing, and when Khusaw remarked that he didn't care for invaders much, but would stretch a point if they were Christians, Napier replied diplomatically that he liked all Abs except those who imprisoned our people. "Ah," says Khusaw, "you mean Theodore, an evil son of a bitch who'll stand deposing, and I'm just the lad to replace him." "Alas," says Napier, "we ain't concerned with Ab politics, just our captives, which of course means we shan't help your competitors either." "Can't say fairer than that," concedes Khusaw. "Carry on through my dominions, give Theodore his gruel, and leave the rival claimants to me." That was the gist of it. But Henty and Co. will also hold you spellbound with descriptions of the barbaric splendour of the Tigray warriors, in their velvet mantles, lion-mane robes, shirts all colours of the rainbow, bearing sickle-bladed swords, shields, lances, and a few muskets, their officers in flowing silk headdresses, Bedouin style, with silver fillets round the forehead and braided hair and beards. They'll comment on the noble bearing of young King Khusaw, in his red-fringed toga and gold gauntlets, mild in speech and manner, and not the smartest despot between Cairo and the Cape, perhaps, but amiable to a degree, being in no doubt which side his bread was buttered. The proceedings concluded with ceremonial inspections, Napier running the rule over the Tigray army, strapping fellows, if primitively armed, and Khusaw being treated to a display of foot drill and manoeuvres by our gallant lads. There were those who thought we'd have done better to show the Abs our Armstrong guns and rockets in action, by way of warning, for they seemed to have come away from that first encounter convinced that, while we'd be invincible on the plain, we'd be no match for their irregulars in the high country. All this was over by the time we'd breasted the slope to the crest where the pickets were stationed, with the sun setting behind them. and here came a young subaltern of the 3rd Native Cavalry, mighty trim in his blue and silver, cantering downhill to meet us. All